Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Matters, your go-to source for the latest industry news and insights. We bring you up-to-date information on the real estate market and discuss the latest trends, technologies, and strategies to help you make informed decisions. And now, we invite you to join us as we explore the exciting world of commercial real estate. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Commercial Real Estate Matters. I'm your host, John Powell, with Phoenix Commercial Properties, based in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it's great to be joined today by someone I've known for more than 20 years. Our guest today has been involved in the commercial real estate landscape throughout the Research Triangle region for almost 25 years. Today, Amanda Hoyle serves as the Director of Land Acquisition for TriPoint Homes, and she previously served as a reporter for the Triangle Business Journal and focused on the commercial real estate sector throughout her career with TBJ. Another interesting fact about Amanda is that she led the charge to begin tracking all of the office, retail, and industrial inventory that was being built and the inventory that was already on the ground throughout the region for TBJ. And Amanda has led this charge for more than two decades. We get to see the results each quarter when we receive Space Magazine, and every broker, every owner, every lender in our market looks forward to this information. Amanda, welcome to Commercial Real Estate Matters, and thank you so much for taking time to join us in the studio.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And it's great to reconnect with you. I think you and I really, we have known each other truly for 20 plus years.
Yes.
And our paths will cross maybe only once a year or once every few years, but it's always great to just reconnect.
It's always like old friends coming back together.
It is. We're like a bad penny.
Yes.
Well, take us back to the early days with TBJ, if you would. Did you begin as a reporter, and how did you decide to focus on the commercial real estate market?
Yes. I mean, my background is in journalism. I had studied journalism in college and worked for a couple of smaller newspapers, and an opportunity came available at Triangle Business Journal. Editor Sugata Mukherjee had graduated also from my alma mater at University of Mississippi, and yes. So found out about the opportunity that was here. I had it in my head. At some point, I went to live between the mountains and the beach, and so I was like, I'm curious. And it ended up being a life-changing moment for me, taking that call from him and deciding to move to Raleigh in 2001. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I didn't have any family here, but like so many other people who've migrated here, I've just decided I've stayed. I've met my husband here. We've got a family here. So this is home now. So that was in 2001. As far as the commercial real estate, honestly, that was Sugata. That was the beat that was open at the time. I lucked up and I got the assignment for the real estate beat.
Oh my goodness.
Knew very little about real estate. And it's funny because our mutual friend, Rex Thomas, and yes. He kind of took me under his wing. And there were several others in town that really just said, we like TBJ and what they're doing in the market. They've always had a strong coverage in commercial real estate. And they knew I didn't know a lot. And so I had a lot of people who would give me advice after my stories would run on
good and bad feedback.
Constructive feedback. And after a couple of years or so, I started, okay, I'm starting to kind of understand this now, and it's making a lot more sense. And it helped that the publication was already such a strong leader in covering the real estate market in the Triangle and understanding the people who are involved, and not just the transactions, but really the people behind the deals. That was really the important part, was understanding not just a transaction of money or of a property. It was, who is this impacting? Who is it affecting? And what does it mean for our business community? So they had already built a very strong readership base and base of reporting and knowledge and real estate. So I just did my best not to mess it up.
Well, you've done a great job. And actually, that's a great segue, because I always thought that you and TBJ did a great job of really announcing the latest projects and the content that y'all always had. It was just really informative, but how in the world did y'all stay so consistent in capturing quality content when all of those involved in the commercial landscape is such a diverse group of people?
It really is. I mean, it's not unlike other types of business where it's building that trust and relationship and the networking. And
yeah,
so
absolutely.
It was always, my editors were always pushing me to attend more events to make sure that we were on top of the information, we were current on what was happening, yes. but also just to kind of talk with the people who were there and what else is going on. And so staying top of mind was important in, you know, same as in business. It's staying, the more events you go to, the more people that you talk to, the more information you're going to gather and the better understanding you'll have in learning things. And so it is providing that intelligence that they've the basis, that's the foundation of the paper for the business community. And for us, it was always trust but verify. They allowed me to take a small little tidbit of information that I found either from talking with someone at an event or a lot of my reporting actually started from public records. And it was a great way to protect my sources in a lot of times where things—
Some anonymity.
Anonymity, yes, exactly. So I would get, I traded information is how I built a lot of my trust was someone would call me, hey, I heard this, and I'd call them back, well, this is what I learned. And so we kind of trade information. And whenever possible, I always tried to track down a public document of some sort that would show that this is really happening, that this is what's going on. But I always tried to, if I couldn't find that public document, I tried to make sure I always had multiple sources that were saying the same thing, that we're not connected to each other, and people that I trusted. And I learned over the years who I could trust and those who I needed to maybe yes. trust and check again, mm-hmm. Make mm-hmm. sure, because we've got but the thing is we've got such a wonderful, welcoming environment in the Triangle the real estate market. We actually do want to help each other for the most part. We compete, but we still want to elevate the market and we want to elevate the industry. So I think that I've always loved that about real estate in this market.
A mutual friend of ours, Billy Redman, I've heard her say it 100 times, a rising tide lifts all boats.
It's so true.
And it's so true. And that I like seeing someone else succeed because their success will lend the opportunity for us and others. And again, we're in a great landscape for that.
We are.
One of the things that I remember about you all and TBJ, I always applauded y'all. I think if the story had broken on WREL or had broken in the News and Observer, which is our major publication here, y'all would tend to not cover it, if you will. So I guess being the kind of getting the scoop on it or really being the one who uncovered it was really y'all's, it was your forte. Y'all were so gifted at it. Are there any stories that maybe even stick out from years gone by that you still recall today that are maybe some of the highlights of your career?
Oh, there are so many good stories. And you do point out a strong foundation of the publication, especially in our early days where we were so focused on the print publication. Now everything is web first. But yes. those early days, because I was at TBJ for 16 years, in those early days, we really everything we had to be a scoop. And there were many times where I'd open up the News and Observer on Wednesday morning or I'd see on REL and there's a story that I was working on. And so I knew that I'd have to scrap that story and start from something in the beginning. And that was because during those days, everyone was using all of those different resources and it was print media heavy. There wasn't as much, there wasn't competition with the internet or as much, there was competition with TV, but we knew that our readers were reading all of these resources, so there was not much point in repeating information that was in other publications. Our purpose to our readers was to provide something different, to provide more information, to go in depth. I was able to occasionally try to save a story by finding something that had not been published yet that was a tidbit. But it was always fun and exciting. The fun stories were the ones that were the economic development announcements, because yes. and TBJ has always done a great job of following that industry. And we were not getting any additional information from public officials or anything. I can promise you that nothing was being disclosed that wasn't already publicly available to us from them. But there's chatter in the market sometimes, and you can, after if you build a trust with your readers and with your sources, then that you trade information. It goes back to that. So the economic development stories were fun. And because I often would try to turn my commercial real estate stories into economic development, because if you're building a building or if you're leasing space, then you're adding jobs. And that was important to kind of track on what's following in the market. So that I always tried to segue the two together and try to show how our market is elevating itself.
Amanda, when did you and TBJ decide to track the inventory around the market? And how in the world were you able to capture accurate information? Number one, it just seems such this was a huge undertaking. When did all that begin?
Well, you're speaking about the space publications, the survey, and that actually predated me by about a decade. Yes.
Really?
Really. It was in the late 80s because I actually went back to like the microfiche in the library just because I go down a rabbit hole and I need to know as much information as I can. And the space publication is, I mean, this is for those who are not familiar with it, it is a quarterly publication that's inserted inside the paper where they are tracking every commercial property that's over 10,000 square feet, that's office, flex, warehouse, retail, that is available for lease. And it's tracking the occupancy and the vacancy and the tenant moves that are happening within that. But that is a database that dates back to the late 80s. I know that Highwoods Properties was actually one of the first ones to start it.
Okay.
And TBJ kind of took it and built upon it. And by like 1991, I think, or 92, is from what I could see, they had pretty much taken it in-house altogether, TBJ had. So I cannot take credit for starting it. It predated me.
Okay.
And it was already going pretty strong, even when I came in 2001. My former colleague and good friend, Jeff Drew, was in charge of it for a number of years. And he would lead the committee, because we do have we call it the Space Committee. And it is a group of about a dozen brokers on more on the landlord side, some on the tenant side, people who are nosy and keep up with what everybody else is doing as well as their own jobs for the most part. I think they would appreciate me saying that. But we do try to have people in the know on the committee who can, because their purpose of the committee is to correct and verify information that's in the survey. And so when Jeff departed TBJ, I inherited the space publication and I was already familiar with, because honestly, it is space that really has helped elevate and keep TBJ at the top of the commercial estate market because of its intelligence and the depth of information that's in there.
Agree.
Because it is a huge undertaking every quarter. And I think we are the only publication in the country that does it. Most other people depend on other resources, but nobody publishes a whole database of every building in the market like TBJ does. And I had a number of other papers across the country that would call me and say, hey, how did you start this? I'm like, well, because it is a database of these, it's over 10,000 properties that are in this listing
oh
every
my
quarter.
Goodness.
And I think we're up to 100. I wrote down my notes. What are we at now? This 180 million square feet of commercial office real estate space that it's tracking every quarter. So it is a huge undertaking, but it is such a resource and such an asset to this community and this market. That even when I left TBJ and it was hard for me to let go completely. So I'm very thankful that they've let me continue on and under that mantle. It's a lot of work, but I do still enjoy tracking the market and understanding in the market and what's happening, both on shifts that are happening in office versus warehouse and retail.
Positive and negative.
And I have been through the ups and downs. Agreed. And so it's been quite a journey.
Well, my background's marketing, but I'm also a numbers nerd. And so I love looking at the data and hopefully it's positive absorption from the last quarter or year to date. But oftentimes maybe we're in a little bit of a tough market. And so you can really see the negative absorption numbers. But then I also want to know the backstory. So maybe it's because of new deliveries that there's been new space added to the market. And so it's yet to be absorbed. And so I can only imagine the time, energy, and effort that you and your predecessors and certainly the committee put into it. And we get to benefit from it every quarter when I get a chance to see Space Magazine. So thank you. As a colleague or as a member of the commercial community here for years, we just appreciate it. Do you have any idea how the numbers have shifted over the years? If we were to go back and drop back 10 years or 20 years, the amount of inventory that we've added maybe in office or retail or even in the industrial sectors?
Yep. I was looking back the other day, and I don't have them all the way back to the beginning of space, but I did have back, say, 10 years ago, we had at that time, it was about 30 million square feet of Class A office space, and we're now at 45 million square feet of Class A. Total office then was about 47.5 million square feet, and now we're at 62.7. So that's about a 32% increase. But I'll also put a little asterisk next to it because a couple of years ago, the committee and TBJ made the decision to take out all of the office buildings that were primarily built for life science and laboratory and move that into the flex category.
Yes.
We now categorize flex by industrial flex, which is your traditional office with a little bit of warehouse space attached to it, versus industrial lab. So there are two categories in flex now, but a lot of those flex buildings used to be an office. So the office inventory has actually probably grown even more than that 32%. So I will preface that with the flex market. Going back 10 years ago, there was about 17 million square feet. And now it's up about 56%, about 26.5 million. So yeah, that has grown. The warehouse market has gone up 54% from like 28 million to 43 million square feet that we're tracking now. So it is just a huge change that's happened. Luckily, I didn't have to bite off all that all at once. And that is one thing is because we do it quarterly, it happens in increments. And because we're tracking the new construction market, I'm just moving it from one category into the next each quarter. And it just kind of happens a little bit. And then suddenly I look up and our market's grown 35%. And it's just pretty amazing what's happened. Yeah.
Those numbers kind of blow my mind in terms of a 10-year leap, if you will. And also sometimes I look at the office market and the industrial market sort of parallel each other with 43, 44 million square feet of product on the ground today.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And also know that there are a lot of rules or criteria that y'all have to set. I think you mentioned that the building, an office, has to be over 10,000 square feet, if you will. So there's even product on the ground that doesn't even meet the matrix, if you will, some of the smaller type properties. And if I recall, for us to make the list, because sometimes we might be representing a project and he goes, John, why am I not in the list? And they have recently broken ground. And usually I'll say, I think the criteria is we've got to have footings in the ground.
Yes.
For us to make the list on, say, an industrial box, share with our audience really maybe the criteria to get in the matrix.
Yes. On new construction, yes, you have to have footings. And that rule was put into place back either the 2001 tech bust or the recession, where buildings would get started but would never get finished. And or it was announced and it was put on the list but would never get built.
Never broke ground.
Correct.
Which does happen.
Correct. And same thing with buildings that are being demolished. I don't technically take it off the list until the building is demolished, because I have also seen where a new property owner has come in. They're announcing redevelopment plans.
Yes.
They're going to tear it down and build a new property. Then the market shifts. The metrics change on the interest rates and what they're able to do on the financing side, and they change their minds. And so they decide to renovate the building instead. And so I don't take a building out of the survey until it has physically been demolished or retraded into something else. Because another one of the rules is, especially on the office side, is we're not tracking owner-occupied buildings. These are buildings that are for lease.
Correct.
On the warehouse side, we do track owner-occupied, because I have seen, say you've got a 200,000 square foot warehouse, a distributor company will come in and buy it and use it for their own use, but then 5 years later, they'll sell it to an investor and it becomes a for lease. And so that's a huge swing. So to eliminate those huge swings, especially on the warehouse side, we keep some owner-occupied buildings that are in the inventory. We just don't take them out. But on the office side, it does need to be for lease in order for it to qualify. And so that's where I have some gray areas when it comes to like office condos, where if half of it is office condo and owner-occupied, I take it out of the survey. And so it's one of these where we've got some gray areas that we've kind of had to fix the rules in or further define the rules over the years. But that's kind of the guidelines we try to keep it to, is 10,000 square feet minimum. For the new construction, yes, you need to have your footings.
But it allows you all to control the data.
Correct.
And to
keep it
make
consistent.
It consistent.
Keep it consistent.
Perfect word.
So you can go back and look at the data from 10 years ago, and you know that it's going to be apples to apples to what we're tracking now.
Amanda, you and I have been mighty blessed by being in an amazing region that's achieved a lot of prosperity and success and growth over the years. But we've also endured, you just touched base on the dot-com bust and even the housing bust, if you will, that back in 08. Today, parts of the commercial landscape are really thriving. I'm amazed at how retail has bounced back after really the COVID. But then there's other sectors like, say, the Class A office sector, which I think is really hurting. Based on history, based on historical information, do you think we're okay in terms of perhaps a rebound for that office sector? Or even you can talk about other sectors as well.
Yes. I mean, that is something that's been top of mind for a while for all of us. 5 years ago, I was really worried about retail and what was happening with retail. And that has just come back and is flourishing. Part of that also is because new construction of retail slowed down. And so the market was able to catch back up. And so that is what we are seeing now is these shopping centers are getting filled up and leasing rates are going up because we didn't have that much new inventory that was coming available. I think we're going to see a similar track happen on the office side because this is different than, yes, I mentioned the 01. We talked about a lot of shadow space back then where a lot of company called Ericsson had a million square feet of shadow space out there, space that they had pre-leased anticipating growth. And then the tech bust happened. They didn't need that space anymore. There were a lot of buildings and it took the market a while to even back out and catch back up. And so what we saw was construction pulled back until the market could kind of catch back up. I think we're going to see the same thing happen with the office market. Yes, this is different in that during other recessions, we had companies that were laying off employees that eventually started building back up. This one is different. The companies are not laying off employees. They're just not coming into the office.
Right.
And so it's just going to take a little bit of time for the market to readjust to how many people do want to come into, how many companies are requiring their people to come back and need their people to come back versus companies that are still adding jobs that need to be in an office. And so I think we're going through an adjustment period and it's going to take some time.
Yes.
I don't think that we're overbuilt in this market right now.
Okay.
Vacancy rates will go up. That's inevitable because we don't fully know how much space is out there that's not being utilized until those leases expire. Mm-hmm. We have been tracking in space very closely the sublease market. Mm-hmm. We have seen that stabilize. And so there are some very large chunks of space out there that companies like UNC Health and Duke University, even Duke Energy and Citrix and others have vacated the buildings and they're empty, still paying rent on them. Mm-hmm. So we still count them as occupied. But so we know eventually when those leases roll that will count as vacancy. So that I'm paying close attention to that. So it will take a little bit of time to kind of work through that. But I also see that other companies wanting to come in to take over that space in the future. There was just this week in Charlotte, this is a story in Charlotte, but where I think it was Vanguard is buying the Centene campus.
Ah, I saw that.
That is a very positive sign.
Tremendous news.
Yes, because that was beautiful, beautiful buildings that nobody had ever moved into. And now you do have a user coming in to take up that space. And it'll take them, they're going to be consolidating, so they'll be vacating some space. It may end up being on the absorption side. It'll be great in the beginning. But just the fact that those Class A buildings will have vibrancy. That just says a lot for how you feel about your community you're in. So I'm looking for hopeful signs like this. And I think we will see some examples like that happen here. I'm not privy to any additional information than what's going on, but I am hopeful that companies will start having their employees coming back and we'll see that resurgence. But over the next couple of years, it's going to be a little bit of a bumpy road for the landlords, for the property owners.
Well, and even to a few things that you touched on, like at Phoenix Commercial, we're in the office and we're at work in our particular office building. Mondays and Fridays, you can park at the front door. You can pretty much park wherever you want. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, I think, is when the majority of people in our building are there and the parking lot is packed. And so that resurgence is already beginning to happen. And just the camaraderie, you see the people, they like being engaged. They like, at our office, we team on a lot of assignments. And so we need to collaborate. We kind of need to be in that office environment. But I love hearing the news when, like we talked earlier about someone else's success.
Yes.
It will breed for us. And then even as a practitioner, oftentimes when I think that there's a 50,000 square foot vacancy, case in point, I look at it as a 50,000 square foot opportunity.
Exactly.
That we could land more jobs. We're so attractive and we're on everybody's map anyway. Someone's going to come and capture that space. As you say, I think it's just kind of a matter of time. On the industrial sector, could we maybe setting the same tone? There's so much product that's under construction or maybe even, I'll call it, being planned and it might be delivered in 2025. Are there any concerns maybe for the industrial market looking forward down the road a little bit?
Yeah, the industrial market, let me say, so I haven't seen any red flags popping up around here yet.
It seems so strong.
It does. And so I hear stories that are happening in other parts of the country. Amazon's starting to let go of some of their leases here and there.
A great example.
And so I'm hearing examples in other places. I haven't started seeing it here. We've never been a major warehouse market because we're not at the crossroads of an interstate system like Greensboro is or like Charlotte is. They are larger industrial markets than we are. Our industrial market is fed more on the local market and the local needs for the most part. There are some exceptions to that, of course, but for the most part, the warehouse market, I think, has kept up with what the demand is and is still leasing up pretty quickly. And you know, if I see a space, a building may open empty, but it won't be empty for very long. And so I'm not seeing as many more warning signs on the warehouse. I'm very bullish on the warehouse market.
I'm so glad to hear that because I feel that. And then the rates remain high. Rates remain very strong. And I feel like landlord concessions are low. And I almost think that a lot of companies, going back to that pre-dot-com bubble, if you will, a company needed 20,000 square feet, for example, but they went ahead and leased 50 because they were planning on expansion. The industrial market's a lot like that today. All these companies are so confident in their future that they're taking more space than they need today, but they are very rapidly absorbing it. And so we're just, I think all the space that's being built, it's going to be pre-leased quickly and or it's going to be leased, you know, upon delivery or soon thereafter.
Yep, that's how I feel too.
In terms of maybe the state of the market, again, it's an election year. We are in one of the, I'll call it the Research Triangle region is probably one of the most vibrant, one of the hottest markets in the country. So we're so fortunate. But do you think there are any warning signs overall as we kind of look into the end of the second half of this year with interest rates being a bit unknown and a lot of product kind of being delivered?
Interest rates, I'm hoping will stabilize this year. That is one thing that we've already seen it kind of come back down and stabilize. And the economists I've been watching are anticipating will probably settle in around like 6.5%. And on the housing market side, I watch that a lot closer. As far as what it's going to mean for commercial real estate, an election year is always the big question anytime that you've got an election going on, especially on the presidential side. Businesses tend to kind of slow down on their decisions. They don't stop moving and growing, but they may pause a final decision on something versus making a rash move right now. Yes. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I haven't seen that. Things have just naturally been kind of slowing down just because of first quarter was slow because it's typically first quarter is kind of slow anyway. Second quarter, I'm hearing a little bit more activity, some more among the brokers that I've been talking to, or they're doing more tours. They're seeing more companies that are looking around. They're not looking
that's a positive.
It's not a huge chunks of space, but it's enough that we can eat away at it a little bit. And so it's just getting them to that confidence level to make that final decision.
That parallels what we're seeing even at Phoenix Commercial is that I think our tour requests have escalated, I'll say, over the past 30 days. We have more proposals that are out right now than we probably had early in this year. We are continuing to see more incoming calls, and they're maybe setting up tours for 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out. And so our volume, even in our boutique shop, has really picked up, I think, the past 30, 45 days, which is nice.
That's really good to hear.
Amanda, what a great opportunity to pivot into your current role with TriPoint Homes. And I think you've been there for maybe 3 years or so. Tell us a little bit about TriPoint and what are you seeing on the residential side of our landscape?
Oh, yes. It's very exciting. So I mentioned I was at Triangle Business Journal for 16 years. I departed there for an opportunity to go with a company called Metro Study, now called Zonda. And so I was with Zonda for about 3 years, and that was a great transition because, like with the space publication, Zonda tracks the new home construction market and all the new home communities that are under construction and what builders are doing in the market. And they survey all the new communities that are happening throughout the market and are tracking how many homes are being built and sold and how many lots are being developed or planned. And so that was... It was a great segue straight from space because I was so used to covering commercial. This was really covering the new home construction market. And it was a great opportunity. It was a great company. But then an opportunity, as you mentioned, at Tri Point Homes, I was invited to come in and join them on the land acquisition side. Similar to when I moved here, I knew nothing about real estate. I didn't know. I knew a little bit about land acquisition, but more so from a high level standpoint. Yes. And so it has been a journey and a thrill. We're creating new communities for people to move into. At the same time, I'm still a data junkie and I still love tracking the data and the numbers and such, and still try to provide that intelligence and resources wherever I can. Because I also think that the more people who understand the full picture of and trustworthy data, that they can make better decisions. And so that's always been important to me, to make sure that our elected leaders and our business leaders understand the big picture about what's happening.
Absolutely.
On both residential and commercial, whichever side you want to talk about. So on the housing side, it's been interesting to watch what's happening, because so back in like 2003, going back way back, our market was building about 12,200 new homes a year. 12,200 new homes a year.
Which seems like a tremendous number.
Seems like a tremendous number. You go up to 2006, which was the market's peak before the Great Recession.
Yes.
We were at 17,000 homes a year. We dropped from 17,000, just kind of follow me on this imaginary chart we're building. We go from 12,200 to 17,000. We dropped to 5,000 new homes that we're starting every year.
Oh, my goodness.
17 to 5. By like 2013, 10 years ago, we were at like 8,700. Last year, guess how many homes we were building? And
I'm going to say 10,000.
12,231. We were one unit off from where we were in 2003. So 20 years ago, we're still building the same number of homes that we were building back then. And so when people ask about supply and demand, I'm like, yes. We're not keeping up. There's not been the growth that on the new home construction side to keep up with the number of people who are moving here. So inevitably, the folks who are moving here or who are wanting to move around, their only other options have been to rent. And so when we get into that sector of the market, that kind of explains we've not been keeping up with the inventory that we need for the number of people that are moving here. And so that's something I'm passionate about and been tracking for a while, because we haven't the inventory to keep up with everything right now. We're not delivering the lots. We're not approved. I mean, there's a lot of plans that are out there that are approved, but it could take 2 to 5 years to get a project on the ground. And so it's the length of time.
That timeline is incredible. And for those that have never gone through the development process, it's hard to envision that from contract to delivery, it really could be 2 to 3 years, as you mentioned. Could be 2 years before I even break ground. Now I'm another year, year and a half to be dedicating lots and to be provide, and then I have to build the house. As you mentioned, it could be 4 to 5 years from contract to move in.
Yes.
It's so significant. So, and I'm such a commercial guy, so I don't know the residential side. I read and I pretend like I know, but I do not. With interest rates being higher than they were several years ago, but our market is still so attractive because of education and healthcare and proximity to recreation and amenities, the values just seem to be, I'll say, soaring over the past few years. Even with interest rates, I'm going to say stabilized, if you will. Do you think that's probably going to continue because of that lack of inventory?
To a certain degree. I mean, there is still some competition with the resale market.
Yes, good point.
Now that interest rates are stabilizing, over the last couple of years, the new home construction market had the advantage, actually, over the resale market, because builders, especially large publicly traded builders like Tri Point, we could buy down rates, help our home buyers lower their interest rates in order so that they could afford to buy that home.
You're part of the solution.
Part of the solution. Whereas on the resale market, if I'm a home seller, I can't help you buy down your rate. Your bank might be able to help you. But on the builder side, we've been able to help our homeowners buy down those rates so that they can get the mortgage, you know, the monthly mortgage to a point that they can afford. So we've tried to be part of that solution, and we have tried to. That, of course, impacts the overall scheme of things. You know, looking at holistically at the market, I mean, we're still a for-profit business and we still have to make our margins. But we also know that we have to build a home that someone can afford and that they want to live in.
Yes.
So it's always the balancing act of making sure that you're going into the right areas of town where people want to live, very close to schools and recreation, all checking off all those boxes. And so, but because it of the length of time it takes to get from start to finish, because any of the land contracts I'm working and negotiating on right now, I'm not anticipating we'll be able to build homes until 2026 at the earliest. If it has zoning, if it does not have zoning and I have to go through that process, it'll be 2027 or 2028.
Oh my goodness.
And who knows what's going to happen with the economy between now and then.
Absolutely.
There is no way to kind of predict that. And so we're all kind
that's
of taking—
That's another election
correct.
Year, 28.
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
goodness. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yes. So that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of 2027 and 2028 now.
Oh,
so we're all kind of, but we're all in this together. I mean, when people are moving
Absolutely.
Here, they are needing homes and we've got, and it's pushing a lot of people out who couldn't afford because incomes have not kept up with housing value increases. And that is part of the problem is incomes have not kept up with that increase in home values. The home values have gone up because there is such a scarcity, partly because of interest rates, but more so the cost of construction has gone up. Materials are higher. Inflation has hit new home construction just as hard as it's hitting the grocery store. Oh. And so you have to factor in that and the development of land. That's the cost of putting in pipe in the ground. That's more expensive. And so all of those things layered in, even on the commercial real estate side, I never thought there'd ever be a day I'd see $30 a foot. And now we're seeing $40 a foot in our
Agreed.
Class A buildings.
Agreed.
And when we crossed that threshold, I was like, oh my goodness, what just happened? Because we know that the cost of construction has gone up. The cost of building parking decks is super expensive. And so you have to factor that into your rental rates.
You just talked so many things that affect pricing. As I'm getting ready to have my 31st anniversary being a husband, we have four amazing kids. We have multiple kids in college. So the cost of goods have gone up, whether it be gas or food or college tuition or recreation, all the items, it's just more expensive to live, if you will, today. But yet our salaries haven't really kept up with that inflation. You mentioned the price of rent. We never thought we'd see that $30 a foot rate. I never thought I would see $1 million an acre for land ever. And now if there's an apartment project, case in point, it could easily be $1 million an acre because of that density they can achieve. If we get into an urban area, downtown Raleigh, downtown Durham, downtown Charlotte, those numbers just soar because of the scarcity.
Yes.
It really is that supply and demand that you mentioned. There's tremendous demand to be somewhere in our market. There's lack of product on the commercial side, on the residential side. You touched on there on the retail. Not a lot of new retail product has been built post-pandemic, if you will, or during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why vacancy rates today are 2% or 4%, kind of depending on where you're at. But yet when we drive by the shopping center, we see that there's five spaces in there that say they're available.
Yep.
But what John Q. Public and we don't know is that there's three letters of intent on that space. Leases are out on those three, and so they're kind of getting ready to be absorbed. We're so fortunate to be where we're at. Amanda, you mentioned about people continuing to move here, and I hear a lot of different numbers. And again, I think you track this probably better than anyone I know. Plus or minus, how many people are moving to our area each day or each week?
Well, I have to use the other sources that everybody else has. And Wake County is saying that it's about 62 people a day is still the number that they're tracking based on population counts and everything, which is just crazy to
That's
think
amazing.
About. Yes. And so when I see that number, I'm like, oh, where are they moving to?
Right.
And, which is why we've seen such an influx of apartments
yes.
because housing hasn't kept up and we can't. The apartments are, I think there's like 20,000 units that are under construction right now, another 100,000 that are
just
in the planning
incredible.
Stages, which some of those I'm hearing on the side that because interest rates and what's happening with that is slowing down some of the apartment projects.
So yes.
On the land side, I'm not seeing quite as much competition with the apartment builders as mm-hmm. I was seeing before, but still trying to collaborate with multifamily where it makes sense, where for our townhomes to work makes sense next to the apartment rentals and try to make a mix of uses on a particular property. It makes more sense. So, but with that number of people that are coming in every day, and a lot of those are coming in from all around the world. Some of them are students coming to our universities.
Yes.
And they may stay here for 4 years and then leave, but a lot of them decide to stay.
They love the quality of life we have, and yes, they decide to try to, yes, land a career right here.
Yes.
And we love that.
Yes. And we had so many people here. Yes, we want to return. We want people to return back to work. But I was on vacation back a few weeks ago and was standing in line next to a couple that was living in Holly Springs, and they had moved here during the pandemic. They rented a house in Holly Springs first just to get away from New York, and then realized how quickly prices on houses were going up. And they were like, oh, we better hurry up and buy quick. And they did. They found a house. They both work from home. Because I asked them, I was like, did you have a job when you came here? He was like, no, we both work from home. We can work anywhere. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, that's nice. It's nice to have that. Yeah, that's good. That said, it is nice that is one thing the pandemic did, accelerate the technology for us to be able to work from home. So we can live anywhere as long, yes, as we can get internet or work anywhere. You know, I personally like to go into the office and collaborate and see, then talk to people face to face. But occasionally when I need to pick my kids up from school and I need to work from home in an afternoon, it's, absolutely, nice to have the flexibility to do that.
Agreed.
So I am glad that the technology has accelerated and employers are accepting of that as an option. But at the same time, you can't replace that collaboration that you have face to face.
I completely agree. And at Phoenix Commercial, we have always been fairly liberal, even pre-pandemic, that because family is one of our core values, and you need to be at your son's soccer game, and you need to be at that dance recital that's at school that day. And so having that flexibility that now is a lot more commonplace, that you can work from home, there's some days you just need to kind of be at home. Exactly. And I think that we're all fortunate that we can be doing that. Amanda, I feel so fortunate to be part of a landscape, an industry, if you will, that really impacts lives every day. And I'm so thankful that we can do business right here in our backyard, and oftentimes we don't have to travel. We can kind of be at home every night, which is nice. And I know you probably can relate to that and think the same way. As we kind of begin to end our session here today, how do we handle the growth moving forward? To me, I think that there's so many, I don't want to call them rural areas, but there's areas outside of Raleigh, Durham, that I think are going to be benefactors. But really, what is kind of your crystal ball as you think of our growth here in the Triangle region over the next 5 to maybe even 10 years?
Oh, gosh. So, yes, you're right. We have grown significantly in the Triangle. I mean, you will recall back in before the Great Recession, that we were already starting to see a lot of development out in Chatham County, up in Franklin County, deeper into Johnston County, and
Correct.
A lot of that pulled back in when we had the housing crisis. And now we have reached out to those points again and gone beyond that based on what we're seeing on our growth projections of the market. And I see that also continuing on. I mean, we are looking at more opportunities in Harnett County. Who would have thought that? Harnett County is a hot market right now.
Yes.
Lee County, Sanford is a leader right now. And with all the different mega projects that are coming on, with Wolf Speed opening up soon.
Consistently in the news.
Correct. But they are expanding where our market jobs are going, as well as where our people can live. And so it's a matter of, there's so many opportunities for us to take advantage of that. And I see that continuing. I am not hoping that we grow to, say, like what has happened with Atlanta, where you can drive an hour outside of town. You're still in Atlanta. But it takes you an hour to get somewhere. I would much rather be someplace where I can get 15 minutes to where I want to go. But even a 30-minute drive into Raleigh, it's still not that bad, and especially if you're coming in for a market where the commute was a lot longer than that. So I think we will continue to – we need to pay attention to our transportation needs. We need to pay attention to our housing affordability. It is always going to be a concern, but it should be top of mind to make sure that we're taking care of our people. We're taking care of our population and that there are opportunities, there are options for at all levels. Because when I talk about new home construction, I'm talking about We need a lot of new entry level. We need some affordable houses. We also need the large houses for people to move up to. The housing is a ladder for the most. It always has
what
been.
A great
need
analogy.
We need bigger houses for also options for people to move out of the smaller houses. We've not seen as much of that happening, particularly the baby boomers are not leaving and selling their houses because of what's been happening with interest rates. I think as soon as things stabilize with that, we'll start to see that ladder happening again. And so a lot of these, I'm not going to say it's going to fix itself, but sure, we'll help alleviate some of the backlog that we have a little bit.
That is a great analogy. And even like my wife and I, as our kids have, I now have two of our four are married and our youngest is a freshman in college. We don't maybe need the space that we needed 5 years ago, right? And so our ladder may be going down mm-hmm. a little bit over the next few years as we kind of simplify, if you will.
And but your home will open up another opportunity for a family that has a bigger family that
exactly.
needs that. So.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for joining us on Commercial Real Estate Matters. And what is maybe the best way for our audience to learn more about TriPoint Homes and to also follow you on social media?
Oh, for me on social media, it's still probably through LinkedIn. It's still the main business platform. And so I'm pretty easy to find that way. And TriPoint Homes, we're all over our marketing schedule. So there's the tripointhomes.com. Looking specifically for the Raleigh communities, we've got about 6 communities underway right now. We're going to be continuing to grow and very excited to be in this market and working in housing and cover and still being a key part of the commercial real estate market too.
I love that. Amanda, thank you again for taking time to spend with us today.
Thank you for the invitation. This has been fun.
Thanks for tuning in to Commercial Real Estate Matters. We hope you've enjoyed learning about the latest trends and news in the industry. As always, we welcome your feedback and suggestions. Please consider following us on social media or subscribing to this podcast to stay up to date on all the latest news. Thanks for listening. And we look forward to hearing from you.